Thank you. I hope you'll do that again at the end. You see the title of my presentation. You may know what it means or you may not. What I'm doing is looking at players who played all nine positions in their careers. Now, we know about the five guys who did it in a game. That's a stunt. It really doesn't say much of anything about them. In a career, there is very, very little out there. Baseball Almanac has a list, it's out of date. It doesn't include things like the National Association or the Negro Leagues. If you ever get the slides and can click on T-Bones Baseball, it's hilarious. In fact, it might be a ChatGPT as far as I'm concerned. And I'm going to call these circuits. I may make a mistake and call them cycles, but it's a circuit analogous to a cycle. So how did I do this? I used StatEd, thank you, Sean. Pretty simple query, actually. Use all leagues, all years, all positions, played at least one game at every one. Then I collected a bunch of data from that and from the player's personal page. It also includes defensive games since 1901. You would have to calculate defensive games for others. Oh, and also the Negro Leagues don't have defensive games. And I also collected the date they played each position for the first time. I'll get to how I did that estimation in a little bit. So, how many do you think there were who did this? Well, I don't know if you can read them all. The bars are careers from 1871 to 2023. They're opposite colors only for contrast. The red splotch is the year in which they completed their circuit. The guys in green are Negro Leaguers. You can see that most of that middle period is Negro Leaguers. So I decided to make several sections. Clearly, we can divide there. There were 20 years between Felton Snow and Bert Campaneris. So that's an easy one. I decided to put another division here. That's about somewhere between 1911 and 1918. There were 7 years between Jimmy Walsh and Jean Paulette. I hadn't heard of either of those guys either. So overall, 33 in the early period, 19, 15 of them being Negro Leaguers in the middle period, and 12 during expansion. This is what it looks like without the Negro Leagues. It's 27 years between Bobby Rees and Bert Campaneris. A huge gap. So now let's start to analyze it. The prevalence rate, how many times it happens within each of the time periods. If you look over on the right, you can see that the dead ball period had a high percentage. If 0.75% is high. And by the way, 64 of these guys, they're about 250 people in the Hall of Fame. So this is pretty rare. And in fact, the 64th home run hitter has 389. So this is an exclusive group of people you've never heard of. In the lively ball era, it's a moderate amount, about the same as the overall total. But if you divide it between the white leagues and the Negro leagues, there's rather an immense difference. The Negro leagues are more like the dead ball, and the lively ball are more like the expansion. I would say it's pretty clearly a factor of roster size. The 25-man roster was first made part of baseball in about 1910. And so that fits very nicely into some of these periods. Okay, their primary position. By primary, I don't mean majority. It's the plurality, the one they played most out of all of the positions they played. Early on, outfielders. In the middle, the Negro Leagues basically, it's catchers. And more recently, it's been middle infielders. Overall, third baseman. I don't know whether that seems odd or not. It is a significant difference. That's what that chi-square with 16 degrees of freedom tells you. And there are actually three who were primarily pitchers, which surprised me. The position that they debuted at last, no surprise that pitcher and catcher are there, but first base, I guess maybe because it's so easy that they forgot about it or something like that. And then the others are all pretty much the same. Not a significant difference. Now, some of the, there are more last position debuts than there are players because some debuted at multiple positions at the same time. You know, Campaneris had five positions that he debuted at in his stunt, four of which he never played again. So that's why that is the case. So how many games did it take them to complete their circuit? You see the mean and the median. The fewest was this Frank Fleet, the very first guy who was a circuit completer, played entirely in the National Association. He did it in 52 of his 88 total games. And you see also the Negro Leagues leader is someone named Babe Melton. For the most games it took, Jim O'Rourke, Orator Jim, I believe he was called. And Jim Brown, not the football player, was the most in the Negro Leagues. He was actually a catcher. You know, the Negro Leagues are at a disadvantage here because the most games played by anybody in the Negro Leagues was 1,202, at least reported in Baseball Reference. Now I'm going to get into how I did that estimation to get 52, for instance, out of Frank Fleet. So we start out with his appearances table, which I hope you can read. First thing we do is determine his primary position for each season. This guy definitely was a multi-position player. What I really find interesting is that his career primary position was never a season primary position. You know, he played second base almost as much as every time. So that's the first thing we do. Then we sum his defensive appearances, go across the guy's line from pitcher to right field, which in Fleet's case is just about always more than the number of games he played, which would make sense, he changed positions. We then estimated his defensive games as either as the minimum of his total games or his defensive games. I mean, if you've got Manny Mota, he's gonna have a lot fewer defensive games than he has games. And in this case, it's the other way around. His estimated defensive games are the same as his estimated games played. Finally, for the target season, the one in which he completed the circuit. See, I knew I was going to do that. You take the previous season totals and three quarters of that season. Now, why did I pick three quarters? I could have picked any number. The stunts were all in the second half of the season. In fact, they were all in September or October. That's why I figured halfway to the end, the middle of that, 75%. I could have picked another number, but for Fleet, you know, he only played 22 games that season. So there you have it. And finally, I also calculated appearances per defensive game, which is a measure of how much they moved around within game. 1.0 would mean you played one position only in every single game that you played. Higher than that means you moved at various points during the season. And we'll get to more of that in a bit. So we had the number of games. How about what proportion of their career it took them to complete the circuit? Campanaris did it in 200 games of his over 2,300. Again, that was a stunt. Charlie Finley put him up to it. I'm not sure he was too thrilled with it. It took Dink Mothel, who I had never heard of, till three games left in his career to complete his. The National League, American League, Federal League leader for the highest proportion is interesting. Bobby Rees was primarily a pitcher, although at other parts of his career he was an infielder. He played three innings as catcher to complete the circuit in the last fielding appearance of his career. He pinch ran in two more games and that was it. What proportion did they play at that primary position? I said it wasn't the majority, but it could have been. The lowest percentage, 26% of his career. I mean, if you played every position the same, you'd be at 11% for each position. Campanaris definitely was not a multi-position player. He, I'm sure, didn't want to play most of those positions. Now, minima and maxima. The minimum number of games a guy could play at a position is one, obviously. And 42 of the 64 had at least one position where they played only one game, which means that 22 of them had at least two games at every position. The most who had a one game maximum, Dirk Campanaris again. This will be a theme. And Eduardo Escobar, who is the only active player on the list. Buck Ewing played at least nine games at every position, and Bresnahan played at least eight. Then the bottom, the first column, is the most games played at your primary position by position. One Negro Leaguer. Then the most games played at a non-primary position by position. So Fred Corey, who was a third baseman, those 93 games pitched more than either of the other primary pitchers pitched. And you can see that O'Rourke went all around the outfield. He was most center field secondary and the most right field secondary. I always thought of Jose Oquendo as a shortstop, but apparently in his career he played more second base. Now, Baseball Almanac, I told you that they had stuff that wasn't quite right. And I can see how they wouldn't have had some of the league. I mean, when they did theirs, they didn't really have access to the Negro League, for instance, and they decided that some people don't think the National Association is a major league. That's fine. But they report not left field, center field, right field. They report outfield. So they're actually looking at seven positions, not nine. The fielding stats before 1901 combine them into outfield, but the appearances table doesn't. The appearances table has them by position. And I checked, there is no player anywhere in the database where left field plus center field plus right field is less than total, which means I'm saying that they didn't miss any games when they divided them up among the three positions. And this isn't just among these 64, this is among all 20 some odd thousand players that are in the database. It makes very little difference. Only 14 play seven positions. Death defying things being one of them. There is one active player, Kyle Farmer, who's never played either center or right. Now back to defensive appearances per defensive game. So I think it's a measure of how much they move around within games. It's likely underestimated when I had to estimate defensive games because again, if you're estimating, if your number is the number of games played, that doesn't mean necessarily played defense in all of those games. He may have played two positions in a game and then pinch hit in another. And also, defensive appearances, I forgot to mention this. Let's say Bert Campaneris. He had, in one defensive game, 9 defensive positions, appearances. So that's how you can get more appearances than games. I don't think it's a surprise. Tovar is number one. He definitely was a multi-position player, as much as Campaneris wasn't. And there are some others that some of whom you've heard of. Oh, and I forgot to mention, 8 Hall of Famers are among these 64 people. Other known multi-position players, well, Zobrist has and Ian Happ, which surprised me, has more changes within games than Tovar. But I don't know whether it's a good measure or not. On the other hand, Campaneris' number was 1.009. So he played shortstop, except when he was forced to play somewhere else by his owner. And I looked at people who didn't play all 9 positions. Rose hardly ever moved during a game. Let's see, who else? I can't go up. I can't scroll it, so I can't remember who some of these others are. Sorry. Oh, by the way, the second one in the left column, that's Dick Williams, who was I didn't know he was a multi-position player, but there you go. 193 people played 8 positions in their careers. And of course, they're almost all missed pitcher or catcher. Now, we could have more. There's 14 players here. My money's on IKF, because he only has to get first base. The other guys all have to get real positions. Now, I want to change from here, from the big picture to the small. One particular game, September 28th, 1902, and it is the White Sox visiting St. Louis, the Browns. Now, why did I do this? It's the only date on which multiple players completed their circuits. In fact, 3 of them did in this game. Well, no one knew that they were completing circuits, I bet. But that's hardly the only thing odd about this game. None of the pitchers were pitchers. Four of them, this was their only pitching appearance ever. 2 of them, Wallace and Burkett, this was their last, they had previously pitched, but this is the last line they ever pitched. But wait, there's more. These two guys played 4 positions. This is the first box score ever in which you have people playing 4 positions. In fact, it is still the National League record for positions. Anybody who didn't do a stunt, this is the record, 4 positions. Those two all played the same 4 positions. And the next 4 position game was 86 years later, Jeff Kunkel, in August of 1988. It's only been done about 15 times total. Now, I wanted to see if anybody said anything about this, commented on this odd game with all these weird things happening.
8 2/3 innings.
What's that?
8 2/3 innings.
Yes, they decided, for whatever reason, just to stop playing with 2 outs in the bottom of the ninth. So I looked around and I found something in Sporting Life This was a week later. They were really impressed with this game. A week after that, there was a cartoon about this game. You can't really read it, but it talks about various things that happened in the game. So I wondered, there's a signature on that. G. McManus. Ever heard of him? No, but hey, I wanted to find out. Who was G. McManus? And you know, I am following myself down the rabbit hole now. George McManus, who was then 18 years old, and he ended up doing the first really widely syndicated comic strip ever. He was born and raised in St. Louis, where the game was played. At 15, 1899, he was already working for a newspaper. So yeah, I think it's pretty much unequivocal that this is a guy. There's a 1921 Maggie and Jigs, as most of us called it. And this continued after he died with somebody else drawing it. I remember seeing this in the funny papers. So that's from 1921. Now, there's a signature in this one, too. So those are the two signatures. But you got to remember, now, are they the same? No. Are there similarities? I think so. Maybe you don't. They're also something like 17 years apart. So signatures change in 17 years. And furthermore, he had created his first strip in 1900 at the Republic at 16. There is a signature in this Alma and Oliver, published the day after that cartoon in Sporting Life. But I couldn't read the signature. But you know, it's strange. I am not the type of person who does this kind of research. But there it is. So there's my summary. Is this earth shaking? I don't think so, but it's interesting. A lot of these people I found 31 BioProject bios among these 64 players. Only 18 of them was anything about this mentioned. So it's not exactly a feature, but there it is. And I'm done. Thank you.
Question? Excellent. A lot of work clearly went into that. How often did this event occur because people knew or their managers knew there were one or two? You obviously can't know it for everyone, but.
Yeah. I really don't have any idea how often. The stunts were stunts, but one of those stunts was actually pretty funny because Scott Sheldon did not start the game that he did it in. The Rangers were down something like 12-0 after two innings, and I think Johnny Oates was the manager, and the two of them had talked about it at some time. He said, go out and do it in this game. Oh, and Shane Halter, who was another of those, is the only one of those five stunts. He'd actually completed his circuit before he did the stunt. He'd caught earlier in that same season.
Did you cross-reference to see if any of the 64 had also later become a manager or designated hitter? I don't even know if you could be a designated.
Well, I did not check that kind of thing. But some of those Hall of Famers became managers. Well, Biz Mackey, who was one of the Negro Leaguers, was both a player and a manager. I'm sure King Kelly and Buck Ewing and Bresnahan and all those others, they must have managed at some point. DH, I don't know. DH doesn't count. And shouldn't.
During that one, you half answer my question. Who are the 8 Hall of Famers? I caught O'Rourke, Anson, Bresnahan, Ewing. You mentioned Mackey and Kelly a second ago. Is Dick Williams one also?
No. He only played 8 positions.
Oh, that's right. Who are the Hall of Famers then?
I'd have to go back through. I'm trying to. Yeah.
Two questions. How many of the 64 did it in one season as a stunt?
Well, five. the five who did it as a stunt. There were others who did play all positions in a single season. But obviously they didn't debut at all nine of the positions in that season.
And then do you have any idea on the opposite end of the spectrum, what percentage of major league players only played one position in their whole career?
As a matter of fact, that is not that particular question, but that kind of player I have also wanted to do presentations on. I know or have found somewhere the list of each of the players who's done that the most. I was inspired by Scott Rowland, who not only played third base every time in the majors, he played third base every time in the minors. And Jeter played shortstop every time in the minors. So they're the leaders in those positions. But yes, in fact, I've thought about that one before I thought about this side of the equation. But this one turned out to be more manageable, smaller. And oh, and the other thing, the other side, the all-time record, it's the only all-time record that can go down. For instance, Matt Holliday played left field, I don't know, 1,800 games or something like that, but then he played first base, he disappears. Any others? Thank you.